Outer Experience, Episode 1. On today's episode, Cassie and I discuss our top 10 movies of 2017. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, share with your friends, leave us a positive review on iTunes. And if you'd like to reach out to us, maybe if you have a topic that you'd like us to discuss or something like that, you can send us an email, outerexperiencepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Outer Experience. Because if you're in the experience, you gotta get out of it. You gotta get out of it now. That's a little inside joke that a few people might get. Other people probably won't get it. My name's Colton Brazier. I am going to be your host for this amazing show. It's the first time ever doing a podcast, so, you know, there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. But, you know, if you stick around with me, you might just learn something and you might have a few laughs along the way. I'll insert a laughing track right there. But anyway, my goal with the podcast, with Outer Experience, and what I look at as far as the future goes for this podcast is I want it to be an escape for everyday people like myself. I drive a lot for my job, and I found that podcasts are such a great tool for me to just relax and to unwind. Being in a sales position, it can be kind of high stress from time to time. So, you know, I've always loved talking about things and felt like this was a good outlet, you know, especially since I don't have to always talk my wife's ear off, you know, about certain things that she might not care about. The reason I laugh is because I got my wife on this episode today. You'll be hearing from her later. But yeah, really the goal here with Outer Experience is to celebrate experiences that we have in our lives that you know, take us outside of ourselves, really. Anything that, you know, is a release or an adventure or something that just makes you happy. You know, that's really all I want to talk about. I don't really want to confine it to a specific theme that we have to stick to, because I feel like, what's the point in that? I mean, there's probably going to be like 10 people who listen to this consistently, so might as well talk about what I want to talk about. But today's episode, we're going to be talking about movies, because movies is one of those outer experiences that I enjoy. Something that I've always been drawn to is just the different realities that movies create, the stories that they tell, and the themes that they teach. I'm always inspired by movies, always been a big film guy, and love talking about it. So we're going to get into our top 10 movies of 2017. Here we go. So I have my beautiful wife on, Cassie. Say hello, would ya?
Hello, would ya? Laugh track.
So Cassie and I go to the movies together. Wouldn't you say we've been to a movie or two together?
Only a few this year because we have a baby.
We do have a baby. He's a little baby boy, our bouncing bundle. And we love him.
We do love him.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about our top 10 movies of the year of 2017. How do you want to do this? Do you want to do like I go 10 through 5, you go 10 through 5, or to go 10, 10, 9, 9, 8, 8?
10 through 5, 10 through 5, right?
Okay, we're going to do that. We're going to do 10 through 5, and then we'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, because those ones are a little bit bigger deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
All right, well, since you are my lovely bride, would you please do the honors in starting? And if you could give, like, let's say the movie, of course, and then just like a brief reason as to why it's on there. And just warning, there's going to be some spoilers on here, I think, for some of them.
Definitely.
Okay, go
for it. All right. My number 10 is Dead Men Tell No Tales, the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, one of the newer ones that just came out. I put that one on there because I loved how it was a reflection of the other ones that came before. It was a lot closer. I feel like it just picked up right where the original Pirates of the Caribbean left off. And
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really like the ones in between. I didn't feel
I think
I
that's my
that
second
much.
Favorite Pirates of all yeah. time. I mean, the first one's like a classic, and I love that movie, but this one's good.
Yeah,
and they brought
great.
Back all the guys at the end, and I thought it was so satisfying. I remember being really disappointed at the end of the third one, being like, well, What, that one guy is just stuck on that ship for 10
gone
years?
Gone forever. Yeah.
Poor guy.
No, I really liked it. I love I love the land of Pirates of the Caribbean, or the what is it called?
The universe.
The universe. I guess. Yeah. That's the word.
Love
and
it too. Disney's
you'll,
the best.
You'll notice my movie knowledge is very subpar to Colton's movie knowledge, so I'll look to him often.
Universe,
for
it's a big first that's movies 101.
Exactly. See? My number nine is Brigsby Bear. I loved that movie. I loved how heartwarming it was, how it just makes you feel good. It was just a sweet movie.
Spoiler, that's going to be on mine too.
Yeah. My number eight was Wonder. I taught fourth grade and got to read this book to my kids. So this book is very near and dear to my heart. So I really loved the movie. I loved what they did with it. I thought they did a great job. Of course, there were some changes here and there, but I thought the movie was just as wonderful as the book.
No wonder you loved it.
Ba-dum-tsh.
You said wonderful. keep going. That was great. That's a good descriptive word. Sorry.
My number seven is The Greatest Showman. I loved the music. I loved just being taken away into the world of owning a circus. Mm-hmm. And I loved the confidence that Hugh Jackman's character gave to each of the people that were in that movie, the outcasts and the runaways.
Do you have a favorite song?
That's a good question.
Never.
Of course.
That's a good one.
I feel like that one's probably my favorite. It's just...
But the other one's really good. The intro one's really good.
Oh, no, I love the one that she sings, the bearded lady sings.
That one's the one, yeah, that one might win an Oscar.
Yeah, I don't even remember how the song goes.
So for my work, I mentioned this earlier, I'm in a sales position, but I sell for a funeral home. We just pre-plan and stuff, and we did a senior day at the movies, and that movie was the movie that we watched, and it was a smash. There was, you know, like hundreds of old people.
Oh, they filled that theater. They love that movie.
And the intro song's really cool. I forgot about that one, but I remember the intro. Yeah. It was really cool. Anyway, sorry.
Cool sound. No, you're good. My number six is Coco. Disney's Coco.
Coco.
Yeah, Coco. I like that movie. It's sweet. Reminds me of my own Coco. Colton goes by Coco. It's his nickname. He plays the guitar and speaks Spanish. And I thought it was just a fun Pixar movie. I always love Pixar.
Me too. Great list. All right. We'll go through mine now. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think I'm good.
Let me see if I even have this thing here. Oh, let me get this list in front of me. So many papers. All right. My number 10 movie of 2017. Well, first off, there's some honorable mentions here. This took me a little bit to put together. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, I thought was really well made. It's a little bit more of a dark comedy, so I think that's why it didn't make my list, because there's some parts that just kind of like, it's a little rough. Lady Bird was another one that's up there. Didn't quite get to my list, and I just saw that one, so maybe after some time it will. And then It, I thought was really good too, but also didn't quite make my list. So number 10, without further ado, is Get Out. This movie was really eye-opening without being obnoxious about like racial issues and things of that nature. If you haven't seen it, it's a comedy by, I think it's Jordan Peele. Yeah, it's not Key, it's Peele. But anyway, Key and Peele are the ones who have that comedy show, and this is his first time being a director, and it was really good, and there's just a lot of symbolism in the movie, and it's, again, it's kind of weird because it's a comedy, but at the same time, it's very much a thriller, and it's really intense, but so well made, the acting is phenomenal. And there's so many hidden themes in there where you could tell, like, I mean, he's a smart guy writing the story and putting everything together, and it was really a captivating movie, and I very much enjoyed it. My number nine is Baby Driver. Baby Driver I have on my list because it's so fun. Edgar Wright is one of my favorite directors at the moment because he just has such a unique style, and Baby Driver, with the combination of the soundtrack, the shots on everything and the car racing and all that was just such a cool movie, and it was so fun. Cassie hasn't seen these movies.
I haven't seen any of those. That's also a disclaimer I needed to say, yeah.
I think she'd love Baby Driver. Baby Driver, it's just really fun. It's like, anyway, great movie. So my number eight, this is one that Cassie has seen. It's The Big Sick.
It's on my list.
Oh, well, it's my number eight. And this one, reasoning for being on my list and why it's one of my favorite movies of 2017, it is so well written. And the characters are so believable. The guy who wrote it is the main guy.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know his name.
Yeah, the comedian.
But
he wrote it about his own love
story. Yeah, he wrote about it. And that's what I love about it. It's such a sweet story. And it's just, it's really well performed, and again, the dialogue is phenomenal. Everything feels realistic. His relationship with his girlfriend's parents is really sweet and heartwarming, and they're super believable.
Yeah. Ray Romano, and I don't remember her name, but
yeah, and it just shows like such like a unique way of like how we love each other and how we treat each other. And anyway, it's a good movie, like great romantic comedy. So.
It makes you think of your own love story, or makes you think of your own relationships because of how realistic it is. There's a lot of things that you can relate back to your own relationship. It's really cool.
I agree. Oh, and these last three movies, unfortunately, they're all been rated R, so they're not for everybody, but we enjoyed them. Nothing too out there for those ones. All right, my number seven is The Disaster Artist. This was a James Franco directed movie and starring in it. This one was really well done, and the acting was good, and the story was really heartwarming. But what really won me over on this movie was the fact that it's about achieving your dreams, and even though they achieve their dreams in an unconventional way, it's about two guys who move to LA, want to make a movie. You know, they want to be famous, and this guy, Tommy Wiseau, who's the main character, is really weird and just not a good actor, and just a real, he's just shrouded in mystery. But in the beginning of the movie, he's like, I want to be famous, I want to do this, and mm-hmm. and it's funny because he did that. Like, even though The Room, which is the film that he made and what this movie is based on, is an absolutely terrible movie, he like actually achieved his dream of being famous. And now, I mean, they have all these conventions where they'll travel and rent out these theaters just to have screenings of The Room, and there's, you know, hundreds of people there and thousands of people there all celebrating this movie. And I just love how when the movie's theme really is, if you're passionate enough, then things will work out for you. At least that's what I got from it, and I thought it was a very inspiring theme. That's why it's up on my list. My number six is your number six. Coco. And Pixar does so, they do so well with their movies. I think they're far and away the best animation studio working at the moment. And Coco tackles such a great theme again regarding family. For those who don't know what Coco is about, it's about Miguel, who is a young Hispanic boy who is, you know, the son of a shoemaker, and their family are all shoemakers, and he loves music. But music is sworn off in his family for some reason, and come to find that he might be related to this old
musician.
This Mexican musician who's a legend in their culture, and it's really cool. So he goes into it's, you know, takes place with Dia de los Muertos, and it talks about
the land of the dead.
Yeah, I guess what is that? And what's there? Is it called Dia de los Muertos? Is that the holiday?
Yeah, the Day of the Dead. But he goes to the land of the dead. He goes to the like place and finds his ancestors and going for it. Yeah.
And that's why the movie, it does such a good job at balancing like such adult themes, but being such like a kid friendly, not overly dramatic type of movie. Still has lighthearted moments and is funny, but it's dealing with death. It's dealing with family and remembrance of family and legacy and all this stuff, but it does it in such a good, such a flawless way, really. Pixar does, they if there's one thing that Pixar does the best, it's their storytelling. Mm-hmm. And this one knocks it out of the park. There are some moments, especially with Coco. So at the end of the movie, Coco's the grandmother, is Miguel's grandmother. Again, there's going to be spoilers here, but You know, she's holding on to her last memory of her real dad. And it's just such a sweet moment that, like honestly, like, gets me because it was so sweet. And it does such a good job at showing the importance of remembering our loved ones, of honoring our loved ones, and following our dreams as well.
Yeah, a couple things I'll say about it as well is I always love the humor in Pixar movies. I feel like it's unexpected, just cute little jokes in there. It's not the in-your-face kind of humor. It's not potty humor. They always do such a good job of writing intelligent humor into their movies. And then the other thing I'll say is they do an amazing job at representing the Mexican culture, yeah. Because I feel like I watch it and I can see, I just feel like I know so much more about the culture, and it's through a cartoon movie, you know, but.
Oh, I agree 100%. And they capture the spirit of the Day of the Dead and yes. The celebrations and the mariachi and all that stuff. And it's an experience, outer experience, if you will. All right. Now we're going to go 5-5-4-4-3-3-2-2. And if we have ones that have already been on there, because I think we do have a few repeating ones, we'll kind of touch on those together, and we don't have to go too much into detail. What is your number 5, Cassie?
My number 5 is the Big Sick, so we did already talk about that one. But again, it's just, I just loved how realistic it was about relationships and just real life, how the writing, you hit it right on the head. It's the writing and how amazingly well he wrote the dialogue.
Oh, yeah, and I feel like it's not like a raunchy comedy. You know, it is rated mm-hmm. R. There's language in there. But, again, I feel that he handles the storytelling in this one as well without being – I mean, you usually see, like, if it's a rated R comedy, you're thinking, like, there's going to be some scenes that are just, like, super uncomfortable, super inappropriate and out there. But I can't think of one in there –
I
know he's a stand-up comic, so there's a lot of F-words, and they make some jokes like that, but most of the stuff is clever and I think understandable.
On our spectrum, I would say tasteful.
So not for everybody, no. Definitely.
No, but definitely is somewhat inappropriate at times, but I just,
Yep.
It's just a good movie.
It is a good movie.
Your number 5.
My number 5 is Brigsby Bear. And this one was kind of like a shocker for me. I remember hearing about it at the Sundance Film Festival and being really excited about it because I felt like the theme of it was different enough to, I guess when I just hear a story that sounds unique, I'm like, okay, this actually is one I really want to see. And it's about, so Kyle Mooney is the guy from Saturday Night Live. He plays the main character. Whose name is James. I should have known mm-hmm. that one. but, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of this one because this one I think is better if you don't know too much about it. What I'll say about it is it's about a kid who grew up with a TV show called Brigsby Bear, and the show gets unexpectedly canceled, and then he wants to remake it. He wants to finish the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, the plot brings up a lot of these circumstances, which again, I don't want to spoil because I genuinely think that this movie is much better not knowing that part of it. But the plot presents a lot of things that make you think that this show wasn't the best for him to grow up on. But the theme of it is magnified in that sense because this kid, you know, he had a hard life and he lived through a very difficult situation. And Brigsby Bear helped him get through it. And I think that's why I love this movie so much is because the theme really resonates with me because there's those movies or those shows where I feel like get me through my day sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, or little events like that. Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what this movie does.
All he wants to do is be able to recreate something that he's passionate about that helped him to escape from the real world.
Exactly. And it's a comedy. So it sounds like it's really dark.
No, but it's so funny.
Yeah, it's really funny, like the whole time.
It's all very much, if you've seen anything with Kyle Mooney, it's all very much that type of humor.
Yeah,
he does a really good job at playing the character that James is.
Oh, yeah. And it's great. I love that movie. So that's my number 5. What is your number 4?
I put Wonder Woman.
Wonder. Part 2.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman.
And not because she's a woman. I just really loved, as far as what am I trying to say?
Superhero movies?
Superhero movies. You know me so well. As far as superhero movies go, I'm not a huge fan. I had a bunch of those written down as potentially being in my top 10, but I didn't put any of them except Wonder Woman. She's my only superhero movie that I put in there, but I just loved her. I loved the story that was told, and I really liked Chris Pine in there as well. I thought he played a great part. It's just about Wonder Woman and her story and how she came to be and how she's just this kick a woman. I don't know how else to say it, but she's just, it's, and then not just because she's a woman, but just as a person, she just believes in values and wants to uphold those values and yeah, fights for what she believes in. So it just makes you feel empowered.
I'd agree just to second that. Wonder Woman was a great movie, and for exactly what Cassie said, I mean, it was one of those movies, again, if a movie's goal is to preach something or to pass a political agenda, then it turns me off immediately. Yes. I'm like, okay, I could see right through this. But Wonder Woman was not one of those movies. I feel like it was just a great superhero movie.
Yeah.
Where it was just, the character was so cool. I remember like thinking during the movie, I'm like, man, she's like one of my favorite superheroes.
Oh,
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think it's just because it was great execution on the part of the directors and the cast, or the director rather. But they did such a good job. Yeah, that was definitely, that one's up there on my list too, but didn't make my top 10, but it's up there.
But it's an honorable mention, if you will.
Yeah, honorable. Very honorable. All right, my number 4. And I think my number 4 is your number 3, if I'm right. Is it my number 4 is War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and that's my number 3.
Yep. And what was that?
That's my number 3.
That's my number 4. So, War for the Planet of the Apes, and this is a reoccurring theme that I saw for this year, and this is something that I loved about the movie, but it really tackles the value of life in a way that I feel like I haven't seen a lot of movies do that. But this one, how do you feel like? Do you think like the War for the Planet of the Apes is a good title for this movie after seeing it?
Not really, because it's more... It's
internal war.
Yeah, because I remember talking about this after we watched it, how it wasn't, the war part of it was maybe a fifth of the movie.
Yeah, like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. But overall, it was more about the inner struggles and yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's part of the reason why I loved it. It's a very believable story. Woody Harrelson plays the villain. And it's one of those things where I agree with the villain, where I'm like, you know what? If my species, spoiler alert, was on the brink of extinction, these might be the measures that I would take to protect the human race. You know. But then there's Caesar's character, who's played phenomenally well by Andy Serkis. And I feel like he should honestly get like some recognition for the motion capturing that he does, because he's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah,
he's good in real life, too. Yeah. He was good in the Black Panther movie. He was good in that.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll start using his normal face in other
instead
movies.
Instead of just his motion capture.
His monkey face, yeah. But it was such a good movie and such a like a heartfelt performance by, again, this CGI monkey. But the CGI work is phenomenal. You can't really even tell, honestly. It's getting so like eerie how good it is.
Yeah.
But does such a good job about, like Caesar does such a good job conveying what it means to be a leader and, you know, what it means to... Again, value life. I mean, he's very much, you know, in a very difficult situation during this movie where he's like a prisoner of war. So it could have been prisoner of war of the Planet of the Apes. But it's a really heartwarming, very, you know, like it gets you. It's a very emotional driven movie. And I think it's a great conclusion to a phenomenal trilogy. I really love the new Planet of the Apes trilogy.
I agree. Yeah.
Did you want to say anything else? Because I know it's on your...
Well, I just loved, I don't remember the ape's name, but the one that they find who...
the funny one?
Yeah, who joins them. But he's just such a cute, like, comedic relief in the movie because it is such a serious movie without being an annoying comedy or humor in any way. But he's just such a sweet, cute character.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding. I forget what that guy's name was, too. But, yeah he's the...
Lake?
Oh, yeah, no.
Or Cornelius? No. anyway.
Yeah, he was good. I think he was a good addition. I was kind of like worried when he first came into the movie because he like made a joke like in the first like minute, and I was like,
like, here comes it. Well,
movie's Jar Jar.
Yes.
but he was really funny.
He was so sweet.
And he was so sweet to the human girl that they had, and it was I think that was a good addition. They have great characters in that, and it's really a testament of how well not only the CGI is, but the directing and the writing, that you can empathize with these apes in such a way.
Yeah.
They do such a good job at making them real.
I never thought I would empathize with an ape. But
if it's one thing I thought I'd never do.
Those apes, they get you.
So that's Cassie's number three.
Your number three is?
My number three is Wind River. Yeah, Cassie has not seen this one. This one, and I'm going to pull it up real quick because I feel like I need to do this some justice. This one, I loved this movie so much. I am a huge fan of the director and writer, Taylor Sheridan. So he's written a few of my favorite movies these past couple of years. Hell or High Water was my favorite movie from 2016. And Sicario was one of my favorite movies when that one came out. He does a phenomenal job with dialogue, with making everything feel realistic, but also giving each character a distinct voice. And it just feels real. It flows really well, and the storytelling is great. And, you know, he's knocked it out of the park in my book for the three movies that I've seen by him. And this one was his directorial debut. And admittedly, this one probably isn't as directed as well as Hell or High Water, nor Sicario, because I feel like those movies were directed so well. But this one is directed well, and he knows what he's doing for sure. But this one, just a brief synopsis of the movie. So this one stars Jeremy Renner and also, what's her name, the Olsen girl? Anyway, the Olsen sister, and I forget her name. Her name is Elizabeth Olsen, and basically what happens is there's a murder in a rural part of Wyoming on an Indian reservation, and Jeremy Renner's character is kind of tasked to help figure out, you know, what happened, and Elizabeth Olsen is from the FBI, and she's sent to figure it out as well, and it goes in such a, it's just such an interesting kind of twist on what it takes you, but the theme of the movie is what really won me over on this one. It resonated with me very well. And what I got out of the movie was just external forces do not have to control your life. Wyoming plays such a big role in this movie. It's a character of this movie. And it kind of just shows that, you know, these characters who are born into certain situations, you know, there's two different ways you can react. You can either decline from all the issues that happen, all these external forces, or you can rise above them like Jeremy Renner's character and you know, still be in control of your life. And if you're interested in a kind of a murder mystery thriller movie, Wind River is definitely a good one. It is pretty intense. This one has quite a bit of violence and some scenes that are pretty disturbing, but again, phenomenally told, phenomenally acted, and one of my favorites of the year. So, Sassy, what is your number two of the year?
My number two was Murder on the Orient Express.
Ooh,
right.
I saw
there.
That one too.
Yeah, that one made it on my list. I feel like I base my movies upon experiences that I've had and how I relate to the movies. So this one, I love listening to crime drama audiobooks, and Agatha Christie, is the author who wrote this book, and I had listened to the audiobook before, and I remember just loving it, and I know that there's a previous movie, and I didn't want to watch it so that I could watch Murder on the Orient Express and have, like, a...
Spoiler.
Have a... Not yet. Just untainted view of it. And Kenneth, I don't know how to say his last name. How do you say his last name?
Who?
Kenneth Brana? Brano?
Brana? No, Branagh?
We gotta do our research on that.
We'll figure it out.
Kenneth does an amazing job at playing
The Inspector?
Inspector, not Clouseau. Inspector,
Wait, Crusoe, who's that?
Really struggling.
And then these things don't have the...
Hercule Poirot. He plays Hercule Poirot, and he also directs the movie. And it just, if you haven't heard of or seen or read or listened to, it's just a wonderful, wonderful story that is definitely something that pulls you in. It gets you interested all the way to the end. And then at the very end, it's not just a crime or a, you know, murder drama mystery. It is about the heart of the people. And basically, they go on a train and someone is murdered. And then they get stuck in the snow. So whoever murdered this person wasn't planning on being stuck. And they just happened to have Hercule Poirot on this train. And so he solves this very intense web of mystery to be able to figure out who murdered
the guy Johnny Depp's character.
Thank you. I couldn't even think of Johnny Depp's character. Anyways, it's just really wonderful.
Who's the other one that we were thinking of? Crusoe. Pink Panther?
He's the Pink Panther. Oh. Yes. He was, he's very much not
Steve Martin's guy. Yeah. Walks up. That accent.
Yes.
The Twain who Twain.
No.
That'd been funny.
Kenneth does a great job.
He does. That's a fun movie. I like that one. It's like a very holiday movie. I think we saw it around Thanksgiving. Maybe that's why I think of it that way.
Yeah. That's when it came out.
That's a good one. All right. My number two is Star Wars The Last Jedi.
And this is my number one.
And we'll let you touch on it a little bit more because it's your number one. I'll give my reasons and then you can go in there. This one is a very divisive movie on the vast echo chamber that is the internet. You get the people who love it, and you get the people who, like, absolutely hate it. Luke Skywalker would never do that, or all this stuff. And while I understand where they're coming from, because Star Wars is such an amazing universe, and it's built so well that so many people hold it so dear to their heart, I think this is the best-directed Star Wars movie of all time. Especially after seeing him again. It's not my favorite Star Wars movie of all time. That would be Empire Strikes Back. But The Last Jedi, I think, is my number two. Cassie and I just watched all of the Star Warses again. Mm-hmm. Do you have a ranking? What's your favorite one?
Honestly, I loved The Last Jedi so much.
Me too.
I feel like out of all of them, but that's also because I didn't grow up watching all of the Star Wars. I was like the younger... My two older siblings grew up watching the Star Wars, and they loved them. But I think they were like the movie that I hated every time it was put on because it was Star Wars
really
again.
Because
they watched it so often, yes, and I was maybe like 5 years old. So
she went right over her head. She didn't get it. not force sensitive. But The Last Jedi, while there are elements of the plot that aren't fantastic, you know, the mere fact that they're just kind of floating away fast enough in space... It might be a deal breaker for some people, but if you take this movie at its own terms, I think you're going to enjoy it a lot more, because the reason I say that it's the best directed Star Wars movie of in my opinion of all time is because every element of the plot plays into the theme, and that theme of preserving the light is portrayed so beautifully. And that element of the plot where they're just running away, that's part of it. You know, they're barely escaping the light, and it's more important for them to survive than it is for them to fight against this evil. And the theme resonated with me so much just because oftentimes I feel like I need to defend myself if I'm faced with evil. But in reality, the more important thing and what this movie conveys is it's more important to stay true and stay good and preserve that light within you than it is to try to extinguish darkness around you. And I just love the poetic ending where they're on a planet with salt. Like, that's genius directing. Just they're on a planet that's covered by a preservative, which is salt, you know, and they have some of the best, my favorite scenes of all Star Wars are in this movie. There's the Snoke chamber room scene, which just blew my mind when it first happened. And then there's the Luke Skywalker versus Kylo Ren, even though it's such a short fight. Just the fact that, like, if you notice, his footprints don't move. And it has one of my favorite shots ever when Kylo Ren you know, you think he's running his lightsaber through Luke Skywalker, and then his foot drags against the salt, and there's that red spray. I just think it just looks beautiful, and again, it plays into the theme really well. Definitely not. Yeah, I can understand why people don't love this one, but for me, it was a phenomenal movie. And now we're going to hear why Cassie liked it so much.
I may be speaking blasphemy, but I haven't really ever been one that appreciated the fight scenes in movies typically. Every once in a while I'll see a movie and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's a good fight scene. But that's really all I ever feel about it. I feel like this is one of the, I feel like it is the only movie that has made me feel so just passionate about a fight scene. I just felt like I was there. I felt like I was like sincerely rooting for Kylo and Rey when they fought in the chamber.
They're the best.
Oh my gosh. And it was just such an amazingly choreographed scene. The way she drops the lightsaber into her hand and then flings it up and then he tosses it to him and he ignites it and it goes straight through. Anyway, I just loved that fight scene. So I loved that I actually enjoyed a fight scene for the first time in my life.
And then rewatching the prequel, sorry to interrupt you, but
okay.
Yeah, I feel like this fight scene brings back the grit and kind of like the, I guess like the fear of lightsabers, because you know, the prequels, I love the fight scenes in the prequels even, but they are very choreographed and it doesn't seem like your hero's in any trouble.
Yeah.
But these ones, it's kind of like they're getting, you know,
pretty
punched
up.
And they're getting choked and stuff like that. So.
It was very, I felt like I was there cheering for them. I also loved that this was a movie that made you feel for the villain. It made you have empathy for Kylo Ren and the things that happened to him. And like,
he's awesome.
He's so cool. And I love that it did that.
Why
yes.
He's bad.
You completely understand
totally
why he's
bad.
Oh, yeah.
If someone tried to kill me.
Stinking Luke Skywalker thinks he can come in and kill me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, of course, I'm going to automatically go away and shun all of that he represented. So I get where he's coming from. And then it just makes you hope the entire time that he'll, you know, change.
Indeed.
Or do something. Or, you know, I think we watched it 3 times in the theaters, and I loved it every time.
Me
so
too.
It just was such a good movie.
Yeah, I want to touch on something that you brought up, just because this was a big point of contention where, like, they were thinking, you know, Luke Skywalker never would have ignited his lightsaber on Kylo Ren, but after rewatching the saga, he totally would have.
Yeah.
And like, but I love also there's like a poetic aspect to that, because in Return of the Jedi, Luke's big victory is turning that lightsaber off and throwing it away, and then the Emperor, you know, electrocutes him, and that is, you know, enough to get Darth Vader to finally step up and turn back to the light side. But, you know, Luke's weakness is always looking into the future and not just being where he was and worrying about what he was doing. Instead, he'd look to the future, kind of like we often do, and kind of worry and be like, oh, I have to prevent this from happening. And someone brought up a good point when we saw this. I think it was my sister, Eliza, where she's like, well, it's like the idea, like, would you kill Hitler if you had the chance before he was born or something? You know, I'm like,
I knew all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's,
I love that at the same time, Rey was also like, yeah, but you don't actually know that was going to happen. You were deciding his fate for him before it was actually happening.
Yep. And that was Luke's mistake. And that's what I like, how like, it's okay that he has a mistake. You know, he doesn't have to be a perfect person. I would have loved to have seen, you know, Luke, you know, during the whole movie fighting everybody off. But I feel like this was more accurate to the character than I would have been. And again, I just love that theme of preserving the light. And Luke's mistake was trying to extinguish this potential darkness, which actually in turn created it. And
exactly.
That's kind of what happens. So loved that movie.
Yeah,
great movie.
Needless to say, we both loved it.
Yeah. Sorry, we already went over your number one. Which was that one?
Oh, no, that's good. Your number one is?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
I love this movie. And I was kind of worried about it. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan for sure, but this one, it didn't win me over in the trailers or anything like that. I was hoping that it was going to be good. And while I was watching it, at least in the beginning, I remember being kind of skeptical, but towards the end, again, the theme just, it like hit like crazy. I mean, so basically it's about the Allied forces that are in Dunkirk. And all the movie is them trying to get back to England. That's where they're going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it shows how much I know about history. Yeah. But they're evacuating during World War II. And, you know, one thing that's kind of cool that they don't really ever show too much of the villains. I mean, they show their planes every now and then, and it's kind of like this looming force in the background. And one thing that I know got a lot of hate, but that I love about this movie, is that they don't really have much characters. You know, they have the characters, but they don't really have many, you know, stereotypical characters in a war movie. Yeah. They don't have that campfire scene when they're like, oh, I'm going to go back and marry my girlfriend when I get home. And that's why this movie won me over so much, is because it's, again, about the value of life. Even if it's somebody you don't know, if it's somebody you don't necessarily like, their life still matters. And this movie did such a phenomenal job of conveying that, because you're following around these kind of faceless main characters, or really storyless, backstoryless main characters. And in the end, you feel like, oh, it doesn't matter. And one of the characters, I think it might be the kid from One Direction, says, like, we didn't do anything. All we did was survive. And one of the guys at the end of the movie, because they're back in England, is like, well, that's something, you know. And they're talking, and they're on this train. They're on this train, and these guys hand them drinks, and they're all celebrating their return. And I think just that sense of, like, just the importance of life and of staying alive during such a difficult time is such an important lesson that I think that the world kind of needs to remember. Because too often, I think, like, we paint pictures of people as evil if we don't understand them or if we don't know anything about them. But, like, people are good. And I think that this movie did a pretty good job at explaining that. And they also have the story of, what's his face? That one actor who's really good. Oh, Mark Rylance. And he's on this boat. And so there's these citizens from England that are going over to Dunkirk, going into this war zone to save these soldiers. And their story is pretty simple. And his son dies in it. I think it's his son, or no, it's a neighbor kid.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I'm not positive. I believe it's his son, though.
Yeah, I think it's either his son or it's like a neighbor kid who jumped onto the boat, because I remember there's three of them on there.
Yeah.
But this kid dies in kind of a weird way, and he doesn't really do anything heroic as far as movie standards go. He's not, like, dying, you know, like blocking these bullets from anybody. He's not dying drowning because he saved somebody. He dies because he fell over, because someone pushed him and he fell over and hit his head open. And at the end of the movie, they go and they publish this obituary that he's a hero. And I thought that was just, again, a great echo of the theme of the value of life.
Yeah.
That, you know, even though this kid didn't necessarily do anything that changed, you know, someone's, you know, on paper, it's like he didn't do much to help these soldiers out. But the mere fact that he was there,
yeah,
you know, and
he's
that
willing to go out, he was willing to risk his own life to be able to save other people.
Exactly. And I think that's such a great theme. I really loved this movie. I think it's the most beautiful movie of the year, in my opinion. I thought it felt like you were there in the theater. It really felt like you were there because it was so loud.
Yeah, and scary.
Yeah. And even Tom Hardy's guy is real simple. I mean, he's in it for a little bit in the plane and stuff like that. But I love the way he plays with time. I think that was another thing that people had issues with, is just, like, I don't understand these time frames and why does this go in like this. But I liked it. I thought it was a phenomenal movie that did such a great job at explaining, again, just, I guess, just, yeah, the value of life again, just to reiterate what I've already talked about.
And the fact that he can take just it's a fairly simple story that they were being attacked. They're stuck on this place, and then they're
saved. Just trying to,
they're saved, and that's it. Yeah. And that's really all the story is, but he takes it and he brings it into this amazing, incredible movie that just,
yeah, with, like, such an epic event, it can be, like, so grounded. I think that was part of the reason I liked it too, because there's a lot of relatable shots that go on in this movie. And again, I feel like the cinematography has a lot to play on to that, but I mean, we've all been on a beach, and, you know, we've all, you know, and everything with the practical effects just, I feels so real. You know, and great movie. That's why it's my number one. I could talk about that movie for hours, and I might make an episode about it because I want to go into it a little bit more. But Anyway, that's our top 10. Do you have anything else you want to add, Cass?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah. Well, this has been your first taste of outer experience. So if you're in the experience,
you got to get out of it.
You got to get out of it.
Now. Let's try that again.
That's it.
You got to get out of it. Now.
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 Ready? Now.
Now. We'll get it.
All right. Bye.
Oh, but also, Get Out isn't a comedy. I kept calling it a comedy earlier. It's a thriller, but it's funny too. Anyway, that's it. Bye.